Follow along as I read 1 Corinthians 13. If I speak in the tongues of men and of angels, but have not love, I am only a resounding gong or a clanging cymbal. If I have the gift of prophecy and can fathom all mysteries and all knowledge, and if I have a faith that can move mountains but have not love, I am nothing. If I give all that I possess to the poor and surrender my body to the flames but have not love, I gain nothing. Love is patient. Love is kind. It does not envy. It does not boast. It is not proud. It is not rude. It is not self-seeking. It is not easily angered. It keeps no record of wrongs. Love does not delight in evil, but rejoices with the truth. It always protects, always trusts, always hopes, always perseveres. Love never fails. But where there are prophecies, they will cease. Where there are tongues, they will be stilled. Where there is knowledge, it will pass away. For we know in part and we prophesy in part, but when perfection comes, the imperfect disappears. When I was a child, I talked like a child. I thought like a child. I reasoned like a child. When I became a man, I put childish ways behind me. Now we see but a poor reflection. Then we shall see face to face. Now I know in part. Then I shall know fully, even as I am fully known. And now these three remain, faith, hope, and love. But the greatest of these is love. I know of an evangelical pastor who has just recently had a number of difficulties in his marriage. In fact, not long ago, he and his wife came to the place where they decided they could no longer live together. And they separated. And just very recently, his wife decided she could no longer live, and she committed suicide. I know of a prominent Christian leader who has been recently declared to be an alcoholic, and his wife is about to leave him. Now, what's your response as you hear this information? Is it, wow, what else is he going to tell us? Who is that? Who's he speaking about? Probably some hypocrite that I never liked anyway. Or is your heart grieved to think there is a brother, a couple of brothers, who are in deep trouble, one in great sorrow, the other in great confusion, perplexity, and difficulty? We see, that's what the next verse in our series here on the Portraits of Love is talking about. 1 Corinthians chapter 13, verse 6. Love does not delight in evil, but rejoices with the truth. Love doesn't rejoice when it hears about the dirt and the downfall of someone else. But love rejoices when it hears about the success and of the progress of a brother or sister in the Lord. And yet, let's face it, we all have that competitive spirit, don't we? That when we hear of that pastor and his wife and the tragedy in their lives, and the other fellow who's been declared an alcoholic, there's something in us which says, they've lost and I'm still going. Maybe things aren't so bad with me after all, are they? Maybe I'm not doing as bad as I thought. At least I'm not like him. And we take a certain comfort in someone else's unrighteousness, in someone else's downfall. There is that inclination that we have, if we're really honest, isn't there, to find a certain joy in someone else's evil and unrighteousness, to find a certain delight in unrighteousness when it's someone else. But Paul says, love's not like that. Love doesn't rejoice in someone else's evil, Rather, love rejoices in the truth. And there are four things about this characteristic of love as it works out itself in a particular manifestation that I want to focus on this morning, and that is the problem of gossip that I want to take a look at with you. For this characteristic of love almost always will manifest itself through gossip. Rejoicing in someone else's unrighteousness, and you just can't resist talking about it, spreading it around, because there is that internal kind of delight, that rejoicing that someone else has fallen. And I want to look at four characteristics, therefore, of gossip this morning as we seek to apply this passage to our lives. You see them there in your bulletin outline. First of all, I want to look at the definition of gossip. Secondly, I want to look at the destructiveness of gossip. Thirdly, the detection of gossip. And fourthly, the determined response to gossip. The definition of gossip, what it is. The destructiveness of gossip, how it hurts. The detection of gossip, how you and I can detect it when we hear it. And the determined response to gossip, how to respond to it in a godly way. First of all, then, the definition of gossip, what it is. I would like to suggest that there are four elements to gossip, and you see them there. It's wrong information, first of all. Secondly, with wrong motives. Thirdly, to the wrong person. Fourthly, for the wrong solution. Wrong information with wrong motives to the wrong person for a wrong solution. First of all, gossip is wrong information. I'm not saying that gossip is always inaccurate. It may be, in fact, technically accurate. But it's never faithful because it's never faithful to the motive or the spirit of the person that it's talking about. A good example of this is the recent film, Absence of Malice. And whether you saw that or not, the film is about a newspaper and a reporter who makes technically accurate reporting of certain events, but in fact produces wrong impressions through the use of the information. And so in their attempt to gossip by means of the gossip to sell newspapers, a person's life is almost destroyed. And in one point in the movie, the two characters are the reporter and this person whose life is being affected by this malicious gossip in the newspaper are interacting on this, and the reporter asks the question about what she has written, and she says, "But it's accurate, isn't it?" And he says, "Yes, it's accurate, but it's not truth." And by that he means you've missed the whole spirit of what has been done. So gossip always has that characteristic of, while it may be technically accurate, it's not truth. Love rejoices in the truth, and truth never comes when we rejoice in someone else's unrighteousness. So it's wrong information. And it's wrong information because it's done with the wrong motive, secondly. It's not kindness. Love is kind, we read earlier. And this is not kind. And so because the motive is a lack of kindness, a lack of a desire to be helpful and loving, therefore the information given has a wrong effect. It has an unloving effect. It's gossip. Gossip has a third characteristic, that it's to the wrong person. It's wrong information with a wrong motive to the wrong person. When someone sins, there are two people who should know about that. The person himself, the Bible says, you go to that person and you rebuke him or you inform him of his sin to help him in that. Or, secondly, if that person is not responsive to that, then you go to the person who is in authority over him or her. But to rationalize by saying, "Well, I just want you to pray for this brother or sister. I'm just sharing this information with you so you can pray for them," is 9 times out of 10 nothing more than that. It's simply a rationalization for gossip. The person has no business knowing about that sin. There's nothing they're going to do to really help the person. They're not an authority to do it, and they're not the person whose life can be changed by it. And so it's wrong information with a wrong motive to the wrong person. a person who does not have any business knowing. Or finally, the wrong solution. The solution that's sought here is not direct rebuke or healing. It is spreading a matter so that, in fact, greater harm is done to the person who has sinned rather than help. And that justification that is simply to pray for the person is a rationalization for our rejoicing in their unrighteousness. If this is the definition, I want to expand a little more in looking at the destructiveness of gossip. Gossip, I would suggest, is destructive on all people involved. It's destructive, first of all, on the person who's being gossiped about. It's destructive, secondly, to the person who's gossiping. And it's destructive, thirdly, to the person who receives the gossip. Proverbs has an awful lot to say about this. You see it again and again, the warnings about this. First of all, that gossip is destructive to the person who's spoken about. Now, Proverbs tells us that it's destructive because the person is defenseless about wrong information. How do you feel if someone tells about your sin to other people? You feel helpless, don't you? You feel hurt because you know they really didn't convey what all was involved in that. And you're defenseless to be able to tell your side of it. You weren't present. Proverbs 11, verse 9 tells us that with his mouth the godly man destroys his neighbor. He destroys him because his neighbor's not there to defend himself. The word that has been used down through the ages to refer to this is backbiting. You see, attacking a person behind their back, defenseless to protect themselves. Secondly, gossip is destructive toward the person who's being gossiped about because they may lose a friend in the process. How many friends have been alienated and separated because of a person hearing gossip about that person? And when they hear that, they shut their spirit to that person. They think that the person has done something that maybe they've done or maybe they haven't done at all. And a person is separated from their friends. Proverbs chapter 16, verse 28, we read that a perverse man stirs up dissension and a gossip separates close friends. You say, well, they couldn't really be friends if the gossiping could separate them. But that's not true. We're all sinners and have a tendency to rejoice in unrighteousness. And so we'll believe the evil about that person. And if we don't go to that person to check it out, it can separate us from even a close friend. Chapter 17 in verse 9, Proverbs, we read that he who covers an offense promotes love, but whoever repeats the matter separates close friends. Another way that gossip hurts the person that's being gossiped about is that it may amplify their sin beyond control. Either the person has sinned in some small way, and the matter gets blown out of proportion as it gets spread around, as others talk about it, and pretty soon what has become what has been originally a small matter that needed some repentance and needed some of God's healing has now become a matter that has gone way beyond control. And the person is now in a situation where the gossip has harmed them, they've reacted sinfully against the gossip about them, and now things have snowballed until there's a large problem, a problem where people are alienated and fighting and angry and bitter, where there was no cause for any of that. And all because somebody couldn't resist their rejoicing in that little bit of unrighteousness and spreading it around. God tells us in Proverbs 26, verse 20 and 21, that without wood, a fire goes out, has nothing to feed on. Without gossip, a quarrel dies down. But as charcoal to embers and as wood to fire, so is a quarrelsome man for a kindling strife. Spread the matter, and it feeds, and it gets blown out of proportion. And finally, fourthly, another way that it's harmful to the person spoken about is that they can often be ostracized rather than ministered to by other members of the body who hear about what they've done. If a person tells you that they've sinned and you hear about it, your spirit is open to them to minister. Or if you find out about it and you go to the person, your spirit is open to ministering to them. But if somebody else tells you about them, if somebody tells you about my sin, it may turn you against me. And rather than helping me, you rather would ostracize me. You shun me. You stay away from me. And so I'm hurt by that, because rather than you're being open to me, you're shut up from me. And finally, the fifth thing that I just want to mention, there's other things we could mention too, but the fifth thing that I wanted to focus on is that gossip is particularly inimical, particularly harmful to spiritual leaders, those in positions of authority, because their spiritual authority becomes undermined through gossip. You think of the case of David as the king in Israel, and Absalom wanted to take over his position. And what did Absalom do? You remember? He gossiped about David. People came to David, and Absalom would tell him about how David wasn't really discharging his duties fairly, and how Absalom would really take better care of them if only he were the king. And he gossips about David and all his deficiencies, and he turns people's hearts against David, and the result is that David loses his spiritual authority to rule, and finally even has to flee for his life. Al and I saw this graphically just this last week in Harrisonburg, Virginia. The problems that have been going on in that church are problems over the past years, and those problems became focused in recent months. But even up until just a month ago, the problems were under control. People were critical. There were problems. People knew that there were some things that had to be faced. And everything was still under control and being helpfully dealt with until some people began to gossip, until certain people began to not be able to resist to talk about what the pastor had done 4 years ago that they thought was a pretty deficient kind of activity for a pastor. How he had been insensitive here and what he had done there, and they began to dig up all these old faults and began to gossip about them. In a period of 2 weeks, even about 10 days, things went from a situation that was under control to being totally out of control. A situation in which people were bitter against each other and angry, and friends had been separated. Why? Because of gossip. And the spiritual authority of the session was thoroughly undermined. Just this week, I had a pastor call me up, and he said, "Al, I need some help." And people here in this church, this is an entirely different church now, are being critical of my ministry. And I've known that there was something of that, but Al, it was okay until some people began to gossip and began to talk about me. And as they began to talk about me, after a while, they couldn't any longer separate the matters of substance that were valid criticisms of my ministry to those petty matters that had nothing to do with it. Petty, trivial concerns that got blown out of proportion. And again, a situation that was potentially helpful almost destroyed the man and his ministry. He called me and he said, "Just up until recently, in the last few days, I was ready to leave the ministry." And he said, "Now I want some help. I want you to come down and tell me whether still I should leave the ministry." Upset. Why? Because the criticism wasn't constructively given, but there was a rejoicing in unrighteousness that led to a gossip that was destructive to the person talked about. Now, I want to say that I'm not giving you this message because I think there's a big problem of gossip at Columbia Presbyterian. I'm giving you this message because it's the next in line in the exposition of 1 Corinthians 13. And I want to commend us as a church for the way that there has been a lot of direct dealing with brothers and sisters rather than going behind each other's backs for the most part. But let's face it, we're not innocent of this matter, are we? We're not totally innocent as a church of the sin of gossip. Not long ago, we as a session had to take biblical disciplinary action against a couple of people who were associated with our fellowship. The effect of that discipline, your support for it, was extremely positive and encouraging and helpful to the people involved. But at one point when I went over to talk to them, and I went over to describe to them where we stood and what kind of possibilities there would be for reconciliation and for the things that God would be doing in their lives, one of the most significant comments that was made to me was when one of them said, "Yes, but we don't really think that the discipline was from a good motive, because somebody told us in the congregation that one of the elders had it in for me anyway, and he never really did like me." a totally unhelpful comment. A comment that had no business being made to that person, and in fact undermined the spiritual authority of the session in that matter, and became for that person an excuse to escape the impact of discipline. We need to really be careful, don't we, about our rejoicing in any unrighteousness that we see in our brothers and sisters, and carrying that information to someone else, because the effect may be very destructive on the person that we talk about. The effect of gossip is destructive also on the person who is gossiping. We know that, don't we? From times when we've gossiped ourselves, and it's certainly something I think is one of the most prevalent of sins within the body. It's something that we do constantly in little ways or large ways, and become sometimes even unaware of when we're doing it. But the person who does gossip becomes hurt by the very fact that they're doing it. Our motives in gossiping are often the fact that we have been hurt by the person who we're gossiping about. They've angered us. And so we tell someone else about it so that they'll sympathize with us and they'll justify our anger. In Proverbs 24, in verse 28 and 29, God tells us, "Don't testify against your neighbor without a cause, or use your lips to deceive. Do not say, 'I'll do to him as he's done to me,' and pay back that man for what he did." And that's often what we do through gossip, isn't it? We get back at the person by tearing down their reputation and justifying our anger against them. God tells us in Proverbs 10:18 that we often do this to avoid confronting the person. Proverbs 10:18, we read, "He who conceals his hatred has lying lips, and whoever spreads slander is a fool." We conceal our hatred and we say, "Who me? No, I'm not mad at him." Then we begin to talk about the person. And as we talk about the person, it becomes evident that we really have it in for him. That we're concealing our hatred on the surface, but it's coming out by the way that we talk about the person and point up their faults to other people. The gossip particularly will hurt in regard to our response to Christian leadership. We all have in us seeds of disrespect and rebellion against authority. And gossip becomes one of Satan's greatest tools to undermine spiritual authority. And so when we gossip, what we're often doing is we're saying, "I don't really want to respect that Christian leader, and so I'm going to knock him down a peg. Who does he think he is anyway? And so I want to point up his inconsistencies. I want to point up his sins to justify my rebellion against authority, to show that there really isn't any reason for anyone to be over me." And those seeds of disrespect, as they're manifest through gossip, become a cancer in God's leading of our lives. So gossip becomes destructive to the person who gossips. It's destructive also to the person who receives gossip. It's destructive to that person because it enables me, as I hear the gossip and as I listen to it, to see another person brought down in my estimation. And so I exalt myself by bringing them down. And you know, that's just the opposite of worship. Worship is to bring myself down in order to exalt the Lord. In gossip, I exalt myself by bringing someone else down. Did you ever notice that you can't worship after you've listened to gossip? It's because of that basic principle. It's a spirit the opposite of worship. Also, we'll listen to gossip sometimes to justify my critical attitude toward another person. And by doing that, it feeds that critical attitude. And in feeding that, my heart becomes shut up against them so that I love them even less. Proverbs 18:8 tells us that the words of a gossip are like choice morsels. They go down into a man's inmost parts. Isn't that descriptive? You listen to gossip and it's like a choice morsel. And you know, you're sort of like a woman on a diet. And you say, I know I shouldn't have another piece, but I just one more, you know. I know I ought to stay away from this, but I can't resist another piece. And so you're thinking all the time, you know, I really ought to tell you, you shouldn't be telling me these things. But just one more sentence, you know, just a little bit more. Maybe it'll help me to pray about the person a little. Maybe I can use this information. And those choice morsels that feed our egos, that feed our critical attitude, goes down into our inmost beings. Amazing how long you'll remember gossip. I remember a person who I met as a pastor. And gossip, by the way, I believe is often motivated as another way of a person who gossips by just wanting to impress each other by having inside information and sharing it in confidence with that other person in order to get their respect. And yet, that has a very destructive effect that lasts a long time. I remember a pastor that I met once, and we were just on our first meeting, and we were talking about some things, and this pastor referred to a very prominent Christian leader. And he happened to have some inside dirt on this guy's life. And he told me about that fella. He told me about what he had done in his life. And you know, I can't read that man's writings to this day without thinking about what that man has told me about the character of that Christian leader. I don't know if it's true or not, but that choice morsel has gone down into my inmost being, and I can't get that thought out of my mind. This guy's a hypocrite. He writes this, but this is the way he's lived. Gossip can be very destructive to the person who receives it. And our spirit becomes alienated from the person that's spoken about. Thirdly, we need to learn to detect gossip. We need to learn to detect it so that we can be aware of it when it comes. How would you detect it? I just want to refer to these. I leave them for you to look at, but I would just like to suggest five questions. Proverbs 14:15 tells us that a simple man believes everything he hears, but a wise man discerns his steps. And so we don't just believe everything we hear, we judge it. And I just suggest five questions for you as a person's talking to you about someone else that you ask yourself and ask that person. The first question, why are you telling me this? What do you want me to do with this information? Now, very often, it's just not clear. Why are you telling me? You're telling me something negative about this person. What am I supposed to do with that? Person, you see, will often begin with, well, I hate to tell you this, but not often, as soon as they get that far, I say, well, then why are you telling me? If you hate to tell me, why tell me? What's compelling you to tell me? Anybody forcing you to tell me? You know, and the person needs to realize that what they're really saying is, I hate to sin, but, you know, I really want to indulge in rejoicing in some unrighteousness with you. And we need to stop them at that point. Why are you telling me? What's the purpose? Secondly, have you spoken to the person themselves, the sinner themselves, the person you're talking to me about? You're going to tell me now some things that they've done wrong. Have you told them about this? If you're concerned about them, have you gone to them? And often that'll stop it right there. Person, no, you know. And often it's this, well, I'm not sure he would listen, you see. Well, have you tried? Then don't tell me before you tell him. Stop it right there. The third thing, have you spoken to the appropriate authorities over this person? Say, well, you know, I'm not sure he would listen, but I want to tell you to pray about it. And oftentimes the person will say, I really don't know who to tell. Well, then suggest who to tell. If the person is part of this congregation, they have an elder, you can talk to that person, talk to the area fellowship group leader. There's somebody that you can speak to. Speak to their parents. Speak to someone who has the authority to constructively minister in the situation and not just justify it, that I want you to pray about it. Fourth question, can I quote you in seeking to minister to this matter? Boy, that'll often get nothing else done. I can tell you this, but, you know, don't tell anyone else I told you, but, well, why can't I? Why can't I tell anyone else? Yeah, I think sometimes we've taken that phrase as sacred. Don't tell anyone I told you, but, well, of course, this person is pledging me to confidence, so I can. Well, there's nothing in the Bible that says that we have to pledge to do that. As soon as a person says that, that's a warning signal. And if you ask, can I quote you in this? It may help the person to become uneasy themselves and back off from gossiping. And finally, the fifth question is, if it got back to the person that we're talking about, that we're having this conversation, how would he feel? Is my conscience clear in listening to this? I ask myself that a lot of times. I say, if that person was standing right here now and knew we were talking, and by the way, that's very easy to do when you're in my kind of position. Often the person does find out, and then you are in that position enough times to know what it's like. But you can just visualize it. Now, let's assume that this gets back to the person. How am I going to feel knowing that they heard me, that they knew that I was listening to this? Is my conscience clear in that, or isn't it? And by using those questions, you can help yourself to understand whether, in fact, what you're listening to is gossip, what you're telling is gossip, or whether it is, in fact, love speaking truthfully, speaking kindly, speaking constructively. And finally, the last thing that I'd like to call our attention to is the determined response we need to make to gossip. How to respond to it. First of all, I believe that we need, in the use of the questions above, to gently reprove the gossiper. Ephesians 5:12 tells us it's shameful even to mention deeds done in darkness. And if it's shameful to mention those things, then we need sometimes to say to the person, I don't think it's profitable for us to discuss this. I really wonder if the Lord wants us to talk about this together. Maybe we should go to the person. Maybe we should go to the person who's involved in it. You sure you should tell me this? Don't you think that maybe this would be something better kept quiet for yourself? I'll tell you, that's hard to do. I mean, I don't know how many times you've done that, but if you have, you know it is hard. Why? Because we all, aside from a rejoicing in unrighteousness, have an insatiable curiosity, don't we? And someone begins, you see, you've gotten the first couple sentences of the story, and then you're saying, don't tell me the rest of it. And what's the first thing that you think about as soon as you say that? Wonder what they were going to say. Well, what was the rest of the story now? You know, boy, well, maybe I'll think it's worse than it was. You know, maybe I ought to really hear it so I can find out it really wasn't so bad, you know. And our curiosity begins to eat at us. But I will guarantee you, if in fact you stop that story right there, the curiosity will quickly subside in the peace that God gives you that you've done right. And in that will come a spiritual authority. When I worked with InterVarsity is any kind of organization like that, runs by a terrific grapevine. And I noticed that the people in InterVarsity who would talk about other people were the people I didn't respect nearly so much as those who simply refused to impart information that I didn't have any right knowing. And I can think of several of the men who are leaders in InterVarsity that today I have great respect for, because now I know that they knew certain things about other people, and they would never talk about those things. They'd only talk in a way to build up. And there was a lot of things I wanted to know. I was curious to know about them. I didn't need to know about them. And I respect them for it. And you know something else? You feel comfortable with such a person. Why? Because if you hear someone gossiping about someone else to you, you better believe that they're going to gossip about you to someone else. And when you hear them resist gossiping, and you stop the gossiping, you know that you can trust them, that they're not going to gossip about you. Because if you can trust them, that they won't talk about someone else, they won't talk about you either. So we need to, as Christians, stop gossip. Secondly, we have to resist spreading the matter ourselves. That goes without saying, but Proverbs speaks to it, that we should conceal such matters and not spread them. Thirdly, the Bible says in a number of places that we should not even associate with people who gossip. Interesting. Very strong statements. Not even to associate with people who gossip. For instance, in Proverbs 20, in verse 19, we read that a gossip betrays a confidence, so avoid a man who gossips. Gossip is a person who betrays a confidence, so avoid a person who gossips. And a person who continues this as a habit and sees that people don't want to listen to that will soon find that it doesn't gain them anything to do it. And God will help them through your ministry in not listening or associating them with them when they begin to do that to stop doing it. But finally, the last thing and the thing I just wanted to focus on the most for your thinking, just to leave you with this in conclusion, the most important thing is to see how Jesus fulfills this characteristic of love. To think on Jesus, who is the truth. To see that Jesus is the perfect fulfillment of verse 6, love does not rejoice in unrighteousness, but rejoices with the truth. For Jesus is the truth, and we can rejoice in him, and think of how he has responded to our unrighteousness. Did you ever notice through the Gospels that Jesus never speaks derogatorily about his disciples to anyone else? I mean, can't you just imagine is he sitting there in Bethany with Mary and Martha and Lazarus, and they're asking him how things are going on the road, all the things he could have said about the disciples. Oh, boy, those guys, you don't know what it's like to travel with those guys. You won't believe, you know, last week I was telling them what was going to happen as I was going up to Jerusalem. And this one klutz says, boy, Lord, can't you do something for me in the kingdom and give me the biggest seat in it? You know, can you imagine that? You know, but never. You can't imagine, can you? It's ludicrous to think of it. Jesus gossiping about his disciples. Why? Because he never rejoiced in their unrighteousness. He rejoiced in the truth as he saw it getting effect in their lives, as he saw it working in them. In fact, we read in Luke 10:21 and many other places that when Jesus saw them succeed at something, he rejoiced and gave praise to the Father. His heart delighted in seeing the truth work out in them rather than rejoicing in their unrighteousness. Jerusalem treated Jesus like dirt. Finally, Jerusalem had its way with him. They abused him, they mocked him, they tortured him, they scorned him, and they crucified him. And Jesus, knowing all that was going to happen, didn't say to Jerusalem when he told his disciples about it, boy, Jerusalem's going to get it. They think they're big now, but I know what's going to happen, you see, in 70 AD. The Bible tells us that Jesus wept over Jerusalem. Oh, Jerusalem, Jerusalem, how often I would have gathered you to me. No rejoicing in their unrighteousness. No rejoicing in what's going to happen is the fruit of their unrighteousness. But rejoicing only in the truth. Jesus didn't rejoice in your unrighteousness. He saw how you and I turned our backs on him. We saw how we said to God, we can run our own lives, thank you. And I'll run my life my own way as I please. And Jesus saw the effects that that would have. He saw us fail. He saw the disaster that we were headed for eternally. Now I tend to condemn someone else in order to justify myself. Jesus condemned himself in order that you would be justified. Jesus took your unrighteousness on himself and died for it so that his truth would be worked out in your life. For Jesus didn't rejoice in your unrighteousness. Jesus doesn't even rejoice when the devil kicks his own people around. Jesus rejoiced in seeing his truth worked out in your life by taking upon himself your sin and my sin. And as you and I look at Jesus and see his attitude, pray, oh Lord, give me that attitude towards sin. Give me that hatred of that sin and that love for people that never rejoices in their dirt or their downfall, but rejoices when I see your truth begin to take its effect in their lives. To rejoice as I begin to see your ways worked out in them. And our Lord, I want to be kind and patient make that happen, and not to gossip. Gossip is destructive, but love rejoices in the truth. Let's pray.